We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. On today's show, Part B on the Academy of the Ivory Tower, Colleges and Universities, the Lunacy that's taking place, the Snowflake Rebellion. I share my personal story and why I'm so passionate about a liberal arts education and how it changed my life. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome to today's edition of The Rebellion. I am going to share my personal story with you today. This is kind of part B. Yesterday, I talked about the Academy again. I talked about the Ivory Tower. I talked about the insanity of this call for safe spaces and how professors that aren't necessarily even conservative in any way whatsoever are giving normal lectures. This guy at the University of Southern California was lecturing on Chinese business transactions and how to do business with the Chinese, and he was trying to instruct the students on various different idioms and language idiosyncrasies. So he shared with them the fact that, as in English, we have filler words, and error and whatnot. We all try not to use those very frequently. I try desperately not to use them on the radio because it's annoying. I should be able to get through a sentence or two, or perhaps even a paragraph, two, three, or four, hopefully a whole show every once in a while without slipping back into those filler words. But that's part of normal life. We all do it. This professor was trying to instruct his students on the fact that not only do Americans do it, but likewise the Chinese do. And therefore, he shared one of the filler words that they use. And that word offended the students so badly that they've called for this professor's termination because they perceived it as being a racist word, because it sounded like something in English that might have been pejorative, bigoted, racist, derogatory. That doesn't make any sense. There's lots of stuff in other language that might sound like a word in English that has nothing to do with the English word or the definition thereof, or the use of that word, whether it's bigoted, racist, or not. These students would probably pride themselves on being multicultural, cross-cultural, inclusive. They would probably bemoan the fact that white privilege has had such a prevalent part in Western civilization and that we need to move beyond the dead white European males and everything that they brought to the table. We need to start considering other cultures, such as maybe China, and the contributions they've brought to the table. But yet, when this professor gives these students a lecture on Chinese language and the way they communicate, these students say they're offended, and they bring their American white privilege nonsense to the table, and they curl up in the fetal position in the corner and say they're offended by this guy's lecture. It's just nonsense. And I ended the show yesterday by sharing with you why this matters. It matters because they don't stop acting like these juvenile spoiled brats on campus. They carry the same attitude, the same temperament, the same immaturity into the streets, and they start burning cars and destroying dealerships and burning businesses and screaming death to America. And F your Jesus, as I covered last week, that's what they were literally chanting in the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina, because they feel offended by you and by me and by a professor at the University of Southern California who's lecturing them on how to engage with Chinese people and how to understand their language. Again, it makes no sense. You're probably scratching your head thinking, how can you possibly be that stupid? Well, they are. And that's why you're seeing the riots in the streets. And that's why you're seeing politicians cower, because the politicians don't know what to do with these children. It's almost like you're watching a brand new mother a mother that's 19 years old. She's got her first baby. She's going through the grocery store. The kid is terrible twos, and he wants that $1 plastic toy, that piece of junk. He wants that toy so badly that's in the impulse buy section of the grocery store. And the mother says no, and the kid lays on the floor, and he starts kicking and screaming and throwing a temper tantrum. And you watch, and you think, don't give in, don't give in, don't give this kid his way, because it never ends. But what does the mother do? She's embarrassed. She doesn't know what to do. She wants to move on, and she hasn't been trained properly to be a good parent. So she gives in, gives the kid the stupid toy, because it'll stop him from screaming. Well, what does that do? It enables the kid in his immaturity. He will never grow up if he doesn't suffer the consequences for bad behavior. Same is true for you. Same is true for me. That's not just for children. That's true for teenagers. That's true for adults. That's true for senior citizens. It's true for you. It's true for me. We never grow unless we suffer the consequences. No pain, no gain. The paradox of discipline and freedom. We've talked about that before on other shows. Well, so yesterday I shared this story of this professor who's been put on administrative leave because of daring to lecture his students on Chinese language and filler words. Students felt very endangered. They felt their safe space was compromised. It was a microaggression. They were triggered by this guy's insensitivity and his lack of inclusive awareness. Blah, 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 blah. All of those words are just synonymous with an adolescent temper tantrum. It's synonymous with that little boy, that terrible two little child kicking and screaming on the grocery store floor while his mother has to decide whether to give in or rather to discipline him and make him grow up. Anyway, so I'm going to share my story. I want you to understand why I'm so passionate about this. And I want you to understand why I think it's critical. And not just if you're in the academy, if you're in the business of education. It's important for everyone. It was important for me even before I understood the value of the ivory tower of the academy. So my story, real quick, in a nutshell. Try to do it in 8 minutes or less here. I was a blue-collar kid. My dad did not graduate from high school, neither did my mom. My dad was a truck driver, and my mom worked various different odd jobs and kind of a stay-at-home mom, but periodically she had some jobs that she would do, nurse's aide, things like that. I used a filler word. Sorry, I said So, I did graduate from high school, and that was an accomplishment in our family. And when I graduated from high school, I was fortunate enough to get a great job. It was in a local factory. This was in Michigan. And I got a job working in one of the best auto parts, tool and die shops in that area. Made good money. I worked third shift. I was actually a janitor. If you know what being a janitor in a tool and die shop means, it's not necessarily cleaning toilets and cleaning bathrooms. It's cleaning out the chuckers and the screw machines. It's cleaning out the oil baths where all the shavings, as they're making these auto parts, fall into this oil bath. So it's a filthy job. I would go around with a wheelbarrow and a shovel with holes in it to drain the oil, and I would scoop the middle shavings out of these oil baths, put it in a wheelbarrow, and then take a forklift and dump it out in back. That was my job. Made good money. And I would also work some of the machines periodically. I had another job. I worked in an apple orchard picking apples with seasonal labor during the fall. But I was making a lot of money. I had my good factory rat car, living high, right? During third shift, lunch hour, and I can't remember when third shift, I think it's around 3 o'clock in the morning, third shift, lunch hour. I was sitting there having my sandwich on break. And a man who was a private business owner, he owned a flower shop in town, sat down next to me. He said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Working, making money like you." And he said, "Why don't you go to college?" And I thought to myself, this guy might know what he's talking about, because he had a master's degree in international politics, but yet he was working in the factory. Why? Because he was a private business owner and he was trying to make payroll. So he was trying to make a little cash on the side in addition to running his business. So I thought maybe I should try college. So I washed off the grease, drove up the road to the closest Christian liberal arts school, which was about a half hour away, and enrolled in one class. A semester later, after wrestling really hard to get through it, I got an A-minus B-plus in the class, and I figured, I can do this. So I went and sold my really cool car and had enough money to pay for, if I remember correctly, about one semester, maybe two. And I decided to enroll full-time in college. Quit my job in the factory. Now, my mom and dad were really proud of me. They understood the value of education. They perceived it as a way up and out. So they really encouraged me to go, but they didn't understand college education. Remember, they didn't even have high school diplomas. But they did intuitively understand that education was a good thing. It was a good thing. It was a liberating thing. It was a thing that would give me greater opportunities. It would liberate me to move beyond factory life, seasonal work in the apple orchard. It would liberate me to do some things that my father never had the privilege of doing, and my mother never dreamed of doing. They knew that that was what could happen as the result of going and getting a college education. So they applauded me, and they encouraged me. They gave me as much support as they possibly could, which was financially very little. By the way, as I worked my way through college, I not only, as I told you, sold my car, I worked multiple jobs to try to pay the bill. Tried to stay out of debt, did so substantially, graduated with very little debt 4 years later, a baccalaureate degree in psychology, which was completely useless in terms of getting a job. Completely useless. But I had a liberal arts degree. A liberal arts degree, which taught me to do what? It taught me to think. It taught me to think critically. It taught me to ask questions. It taught me that life isn't safe. It taught me the difference between safety and goodness. It taught me that there were other people that had a little bit more gray matter than I might have, and therefore it might be wise for me to just listen to them. It taught me the lessons of history. It taught me about authors such as C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton and Eric Voegelin and Edmund Burke and Russell Kirk. It taught me about other authors that I didn't agree with, like Sigmund Freud and B.F. Skinner and Carl Jung. It taught me how to read history. And that there was a critical analysis of history, or was there a view of history that was more grounded in just trying to discover the empirical facts, the science, if you will, of history? It taught me to read the Bible. To read the Bible because it had endured not just decades, not just centuries, but it had endured over the millennia. It taught me to understand the Christian message that was grounded in 2,000 years of revelation, experience, wisdom. It taught me to understand that the Bible was immutable, unchangeable, and it was true. That it wasn't just a postmodern construct. See, this liberal arts education changed my life. And it changed my life not by coddling me, not by enabling me every time I felt threatened or felt like I was in over my head. In fact, when I felt that way, which was quite often, because, again, remember, I came from modest means. I had no experience. I didn't even know what the word liberal arts meant. I had no idea that it meant liberty. I had no idea that it was grounded in a 1,000-year tradition that started back around the time of Oxford, and that it was intended to build a house of faith, a house of learning, a house of knowledge. It was intended to build in the soul of a human being this understanding of the time-tested truths that had served to give mankind the greatest measure of freedom ever in the history of the world. I did not know that. I had no clue that that's what a liberal arts education was on the day I enrolled. But when I graduated a few years later, I was starting to understand that. And the thing about a liberal arts education is that it's supposed to produce, quote, You ready for it? Lifelong learners. Not just somebody gets a piece of paper and then moves on and makes money in their job, but somebody who has the ability to read the news, to read a book, to read a magazine, and today engage in social media as a lifelong learner, a person that looks at these ideas, even some ideas that you don't like, and engages them and digests them and picks them apart in a critical way, not a negative way. That's not what critical means. It's a critique. It's picking something apart in a critical way to try to understand its veracity or lack thereof. That's what I learned. That's how my life changed. I moved from being a factory worker that was shoveling shavings out of an oil bath to somebody that actually understood that there's more to life than that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I may go back. Who knows? There's some parts of that I actually enjoyed. But there's a big difference between engaging in manual labor as my buddy that sat down next to me at the lunchroom that night who had a master's degree in international politics. He understood that manual labor is valuable and it's beautiful in its own way, but there's more to life than just pushing buttons or pushing a wheelbarrow around and shoveling out shavings, metal shavings out of oil baths. A robot can do that. But a human being thinks critically. A human being doesn't cower in the corner every time somebody says something that they don't like. Well, at least adult human beings don't. Children might. Toddlers might. Spoiled little brats in the grocery store might. But mature thinking adults actually engage. They don't throw tantrums. Now, we're going to take a break right now and acknowledge our sponsors. And then I'm going to come back and tell you how college actually changed my life more specifically and the value of being a lifelong learner. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome back to The Rebellion. All right, I spent the first half telling you a little bit about my story. A factory worker, seasonal worker, dad, truck driver, no high school diploma, mom, odd jobs, no high school diploma. Good people, by the way. Good people. My dad was the hardest working, honest, most honest guy that you could ever come across. Great dad. So I'm not disparaging that life at all. What I'm saying is that's just where I came from. And college wasn't just given to me on a silver platter. Not at all. I want you to understand that. Now, college for me, okay? So college for me was a starting point. It was kind of like a intellectual and a spiritual awakening, where I learned the value of asking questions and looking for answers and seeking direction. College was kind of like, you know, in C.S. Lewis's The Wardrobe, it's a portal that you go through and all of a sudden this magical world that you never even knew existed is on the other side of the portal. That's the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Well, for me, college was like that. I entered into a different world through this wardrobe, this portal. And it was a world of adventure. It was a world of discovery. It was a world where I could turn over every stone of my pursuit of truth and trying to find things that were trustworthy, things that weren't changing, immutable, trustworthy, true, absolute. You know, these things, these words that I use all the time on the show, this was the nature of college for me. It was also a time where I learned that you could have confidence in something other than yourself. You could have confidence in the truth because it's bigger than any one person. It's bigger than any one group or one government. The truth is an objective, attainable reality. I learned that in college. That's why I'm so passionate about talking to you about it all the time. And this is what Antifa and Black Lives Matter and all these people are missing right now. They don't understand that there's an objective truth, that it isn't all subjective. It isn't about their feelings. It's about the facts, the truth. It's not about personal opinions. It's not about their political ambitions and power. It's about truth. Truth is a reality, and it's the reliable foundation for liberty and justice and reconciliation and restoration. I learned in college that only truth breaks the bounds of oppression. Only truth can bring healing and wholeness to a broken culture and a hurting world. Only truth gives us the freedom to bring all the ideas into the public square with the confidence that in the end, We will keep those ideas that are good and get rid of those ideas that are bad. That's what truth does. It's the measuring rod. It's the thing that actually gives you the ability to engage in a debate, because if there is no judge on the sidelines, you can't play the game. And truth is that judge. If there's no referee, then how can you say that Antifa is wrong or Black Lives Matter is wrong? And if there is no referee, how can they say that I'm wrong? That's the irony. That's the fallacy of the progressive left right now. They're all passionate about social justice. They're social justice warriors. They want justice. Well, you can't have justice without a judge. You can't have justice without truth. You can't play the game without a referee. Somebody has to blow the whistle and say, you're out of bounds. And that's what I learned in college. That's why I'm so passionate about talking about this all the time. If we don't teach our next generation the value of truth, the value and the importance of it being the final measuring rod of this debate, then what will happen to us is exactly what Edmund Burke warned of when I talked of his book, Reflections on the French Revolution. He warned that if there was no referee to blow the whistle on this game, then those that were the most powerful and passionate and those that had the strongest feelings would rise up and behead their enemies. Because that's what we always do. If there's no justice, if there's no lady justice that blindly stands on the sidelines with the scales weighing whether this is a good or a bad thing without any political prejudice or bias or bigotry, then if that doesn't exist, then human history teaches us that things end in a very bad way. I learned that in college. I was introduced to C.S. Lewis as I've talked to him. I was introduced to G.K. Chesterton. I was introduced to George MacDonald. I was introduced to these authors that helped me understand this one quote from Lewis. I actually have this quote in my first book, Why I'm a Liberal and Other Ideas. I say this, Lewis moves from criticism to solution. He shows us the way out of this mess, this Antifa mess, this Black Lives Matter mess, this us versus them, this 99 versus the one. This is this mess that assumes that it's all a matter of class conflict and racial conflict and power, a struggle for power. The Marxist view, the neo-Darwinist view. How do we get out of this mess? Lewis suggests that the way to get out of this mess is to recognize that once you were a child, once you knew what inquiry was for, there was a time when you asked questions because you wanted answers and you were glad when you had found them. Lewis then says this, become a child again, not in an adolescent temper tantrum way, no, in the pure, innocent way, because you ask questions because you're interested in hearing the answer, not because you're just interested in hearing yourself talk, or getting your pound of flesh, or getting revenge, or getting blood. No, you asked questions because you wanted answers, and you were glad when you found them. And then Lewis says, become that child again. This is beautiful, what he says next. Thirst was made for water, and inquiry was made for truth. You get that? In these words, Lewis is telling us, he's basically echoing Jesus' promise in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Thirst was made for water, and inquiry was made for truth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for truth, for goodness, for justice, for beauty, because you'll be filled. So college changed me. I became a lifelong learner. And I still am right now. I still am right now, a lifelong learner. And so are you. So are you. Our journey is really one that is guided by the immutable, the permanent, and the true, not by these constructs of popularity and politics and power. All truth is true even if no one believes it, and all falsehood is false even if everyone believes it. Truth is true, and that's just the end of it. Oz Guinness. Honesty, human honesty demands that we boldly set aside our prejudices and our safe spaces and stop the trigger warnings and the microaggression crap. Honesty demands that we just pursue the ideas that are tested by time and defended by reason and validated by experience and confirmed by God's revelation. And we will only find that truth when we place our confidence in it, one more time, in it and not ourselves. I'm going to share the quote from George MacDonald one more time with you. I've done it before, but it's one of my favorite quotes. In The Curate's Awakening, MacDonald says that if we want to learn of the truth and refute the agnostic that's in every one of us, that we have to look to the Logos, the Word, to Jesus Christ, His way, His truth, and His life, and simply do what He tells us to do. Or maybe we say it like this, in today's vernacular, it's kind of like the Nike, the former Nike slogan, just do it, just do it. MacDonald says, in our attempt to obey the words recorded as His, Christ's, in our attempt to obey the words recorded as His, we will see grandeur beyond the realm of any human invention. So just try to obey the words recorded as Christ, and you know what? You might see grandeur beyond anything, anything that any human being could invent. You might see that this story is just plain true. In our attempt to obey the words recorded as His, you will see grandeur beyond any human invention. And you might move beyond your little speculations, your childish, faddish speculations, and that much closer to the eternal facts of Christ, of God, and eternity. I close with this from The Great Divorce, C.S. Lewis. We know nothing of speculation. Come and see, and I will bring you to the eternal fact, the Father of all fact. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.